Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc. here in the second hour of the program today. Dr. Kevin Voss will be our guest. We're going to talk about this alternative to embryonic stem cell research, or the typical method of embryonic stem cell research. Find out what there is to this here in the next few minutes of the program. Then we've got some audio to play. What is this audio on? Oh, yes, it's CNN audio on trying to sort out what it is Supreme Court nominee Harriet Myers really does believe. There have been stories kind of leaking through and here and there about what she was willing to sign on to with regard to her anti-abortion stance, and it seems as though no one's really sure. We'll play that audio for you and get your reaction as well in about 25 minutes here on Issues Etc. Following that, Rick Horton joins us live from Busch Stadium. We're going to be talking about the National League Championship Series. He's a former Cardinals, White Sox, and Dodgers pitcher, and he is area director for the Greater St. Louis Fellowship of Christian Athletes. He'll join us live from Busch Stadium. And then, open lines in the last half hour, we'll talk about a Christian sitcom. We'll play some of the audio from ABC News Tonight about this Christian sitcom that finally got picked up after 9 years of shopping it around by a minor Christian network. And I've just got a question. If there were an explicitly Christian sitcom, somehow by some fluke, freak of nature, made it onto cable, made it onto one of the big networks, would you be watching it? That's for the last half hour of Issues Etc. Our Issues Etc. book of the month for October is a series of children's books. This is a great series. You want to know why? Because when you have your kids young at home, there is every moment, practically every moment, when they're not sleeping, or, well, except for when they're sleeping, is what the teachers call the teachable moment. Every moment, these kids are sponges. They're picking up what you teach them, what they see, what they hear, like they never will again in their lives. In those preschool years, those young years, that's exactly the kids who should be given our Issues Etc. book of the month for October. It's called Follow Into. It's a series of six books around the six chief parts of Luther's Small Catechism. It's for parents. It's for grandparents. It's a great teaching tool. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org. Or call Concordia Publishing House. You've got an hour to do so today. 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. And ask for the Follow and Do series for your kid, for your grandchild. If you're expecting a baby, it's a good thing to pick up as well. 1-800-325-3040. It's the Issues Etc. book of the month for October. Dr. Kevin Voss is a regular here on the program. He's director of the Bioethics Institute, Concordia Bioethics Institute. He's going to be one of the speakers at the Image of God Bioethics Conference Friday, November the 11th here in St. Louis. His topic will be care at life's end. He joins us to talk about some serious ethical problems at life's beginning, almost the very beginning of life. Dr. Voss, welcome back.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be with you, Todd.
Can you explain to me what's different about what we've been hearing about in the news, this alternative method of embryonic stem cell harvesting, that at least from the news I first heard, would not require the destruction of a human embryo to get the stem cells?
Yeah, it's very interesting, and that's the way the press will portray it. And but first of all, your audience needs to remember that there are two main kinds of stem cells, that there are adult stem cells, which can be gotten from umbilical cord blood or from our bodies, They really don't present any more difficulty, at least ethically for me, than any other medical treatment. And then there are embryonic stem cells, and that's where I have difficulty with that type of research. And the way they harvest embryonic stem cells is that they will take a newly formed embryo and let it grow up to about the five-day stage, which is called the blastocyst, and then they will cut apart that embryo and remove some cells called the inner cell mass, that those cells eventually become the fetus and then, of course, the child and then the adult. And then they will sort of mush those up a little bit and then grow them into cell cultures and then turn them into stem cells. And they're hoping that from these cells and they can get them to turn into all different kinds of tissues, like heart tissue for someone that suffers a heart attack, or nervous tissue that from someone who maybe has a back injury in an accident and is paralyzed, or maybe even cells that can produce insulin for diabetics. Now, these new kinds of cells, and actually there was a banner article in the Milwaukee Journal on Monday entitled "New Stem Cell Methods Don't Destroy Embryo." And the way these two methods work is that the first method is called blastomere retrieval, where they will take an embryo and let it grow up to about the 8th cell stage, which is called the morula, and that's a little bit earlier than the blastocyst stage, where they normally would take cells and destroy the embryo. They'll let it grow to the 8th cell stage, and then they will, with a pipette or a little suction device, attempt to suck one cell off of this group of cells called the morula, and then they will take that one cell and then attempt to turn that one cell into a stem cell line. Now, theoretically, then the rest of the cells that they didn't take away then could grow into, could develop into a fetus and then eventually be born. At least that's the hope with that one. And then the second technique is even more controversial, I think. What they will do is they will even attempt to change the genetics of a cell before they even turn it into an embryo. They will change the genetics from a person, and then they will take those genes and insert them into an empty egg, and then they will stimulate that egg to make it think it's an embryo. And the way they want to change that the genetics is to make it so that when that embryo grows up to about the 14-day stage, when it would normally implant into the woman's uterus, they would change the genetics so it would not allow it to implant. So therefore, their thinking is, since this cell would never have become an individual because it can't implant into the uterus, then therefore it's ethical for us to destroy it.
Now, on that second one, that's a different definition of embryo than, because it's an embryo before it implants, isn't it, Dr. Voss?
Yes. Yes. In my opinion, it's clearly an embryo, clearly an individual before it implants. Many scientists and many people don't believe that. They believe that a pre-implantation embryo is ethically different than an implantation embryo. So if you believe that, then it gives you license to do just about anything you want with the embryo before implantation. And then it would also make some contraceptive methods like IUDs morally acceptable if you would believe that.
And really, I don't see any difference between, say, just taking the blastocyst, destroying it entirely to get the stem cells, the embryo is entirely destroyed, and say, well, we're going to genetically engineer an embryo that can never implant, therefore we got no problem with destroying it. That just, all you've really done is just giving yourself an excuse to do what you were going to do before, right?
Yeah, I think so. And in fact, I think it's almost ethically more problematic than, although it's really problematic to destroy an embryo, of course, but in this case, you're creating life to destroy life, and you're changing that life. You're really taking almost more godlike powers into your hands. You're taking genetic material, you're creating an embryo that would not live, and you're all doing this for the purpose of destroying it later. And that, for me, even has more ethical questions than regular stem cell research, which, of course, is really ethically problematic anyway.
All right, now back to the first alternate method that you mentioned. This one, I know nothing about, you know, what this would mean, but are there concerns still to be raised about simply when an embryo is at the eight cell stage, simply taking one of those cells and using it to go ahead and start a stem cell line and letting the embryo, if possible, go maritally on its own way?
Yeah, it sounds good at face value. You would think, well, at least the embryo isn't sacrificed. At least we're just taking a part of the early embryo and then allowing the rest of it to grow up to be an individual and to go on and impregnate a uterus. And it sounds okay. But the problem is this technique is already being used. It's called pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. It's the same technique they use if they want to test for any genetic disorders in an embryo before it even implants into the womb. And, of course, unfortunately, there's a lot of ethical problems with that procedure in and of itself, because what is the purpose for testing for these genetic disorders before it implants? Well, what happens is if you find a genetic disorder, then therefore you would destroy that embryo. So that's a problem. But that doesn't specifically apply to this. It's the same technique. But the problem is whenever you remove one cell or a part of the early embryo, there's a chance that you could kill the embryo. In fact, I've even downloaded an article before you called from an organization called the American Pregnancy Association, and it talks about pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, which this technique is really similar to, just sucking one cell off that morula. And they have on their information sheet about it, what are the concerns of pre-implantation genetic diagnosis? And the first one is for many people, life begins at conception, and the destruction of the embryo is the same as destruction of an individual. The PGD procedure, that's sucking that one cell away, usually results in a small number of discarded embryos. So that's our moral problem with that procedure, too. It's not totally ethically problematic-free, as the press would say, because when you do this procedure, even though your intent is to allow the embryo to grow up and to finish its development, you result in a number of deaths, embryonic deaths from this procedure, too.
I'm wondering whether or not, philosophically, or in the whole issue of the ethical debate, whether or not a significant point has been conceded by the advocates of embryonic stem cell research by trumpeting these new alternative methods for harvesting stem cells from embryos. And that is, they are at least in a tacit way acknowledging that there's an ethical problem that they need to find a way around.
Well, that's an interesting point. I think you're right. They realize that many people have problems with embryonic stem cell research. And so it seems like they're trying to find ways around those problems by developing these other procedures and then touting them before the press that they avoid all the problems with embryonic stem cell research. But unfortunately, as we're talking about, they don't. And that's an interesting thought, actually. And one thing I was talking about with a colleague today is that there's one country in Europe which pretty much does not allow embryonic stem cell research to go forward. I don't know, Todd, if you know which one that is, but it's Germany. And that's interesting because they're very sensitive in Germany about infringing upon the rights of helpless individuals, as what happened during World War II, and they're really sensitive to that, and they don't want to go down that road again. And so they're one of the countries that has pretty much banned embryonic stem cell research.
Generally speaking, Dr. Voss, how would you evaluate the press, the popular press, the mainstream press, in its ability to, first of all, get the facts straight on embryonic stem cell research and these news stories, and then second of all, to really articulate in just a plain, just the facts, ma'am, kind of journalistic way, the real ethical problems with embryonic stem cell research?
I think there's a general level of not knowing in the press. They really don't know a lot about stem cell research, don't know quite often the difference between adult and embryonic stem cell research. And I've read several articles where they just kind of glom together the ethical dilemmas between the two, and they'll even lump adult stem cell research with embryonic or vice versa. And so that's a problem. And just in general, I think the press, at least here in the state of Wisconsin, is very heavily pro-embryonic stem cell research because of the money involved. Here in Wisconsin, we have, of course, the University of Wisconsin, one of the pioneers in embryonic stem cell research. In fact, human embryonic stem cells were first isolated by Dr. Thompson here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So those are some battles that we have to, probably the two top battles that we have to face when we're trying to articulate clearly to the media our concerns about embryonic stem cell research.
And so that we're clear on a point that you made at the very outset of our conversation, there is a method of harvesting stem cells, not from embryos, but from adults and adult tissue, that does not require the destruction of innocent life. So-called adult stem cell research, tell us about it.
Adult stem cell research is very promising. In fact, at last count that I've seen, right now there are 65 treatments already in use from adult stem cell research. There are none developed so far from embryonic stem cell research. So if you're talking about time and where we should put our national priorities, wouldn't it be wise to put that into research that has a greater potential for developing faster cures? And adult stem cell research, it's called adult stem cells, but I suppose a more technical term would be a non-embryonic stem cells, because they're not just taken from adults, people who are over 21. You can get those same cells from children, from infants, from umbilical cords. They come from our bone marrow. In our bone marrow, there's one cell that produces all the different types of blood cells that we have in our bodies. There are stem cells in our brains. There are stem cells in our hearts. In fact, one place they think they can start harvesting stem cells in great quantities is from body fat. And for a person like me who is a few pounds overweight, that's a great news. So the potential for adult stem cell research, I think, is limitless. Doesn't have the ethical concerns that embryonic stem cell research does. And I think that's where we should be putting our national priority, into that type of research. And President Bush has done a pretty good job at emphasizing that type of research. So for that, I agree with what he's doing.
The ignorance you talk about there, you talked about earlier, in the press, is also found among our lawmakers. I'm thinking in particular in our context down here in Missouri, Missouri Governor Blunt, otherwise generally pro-life, has been pretty clear that he does not regard the embryo before a certain stage to be a human being in any sense, and he has no problem and no policy against embryonic stem cell research. And there's a real debate raging here in Missouri over that very issue. There's an initiative that the governor is being pressured to put on an August 2006 ballot for the voters that would change the Constitution of Missouri so that not only is embryonic stem cell research permitted, but no laws could be written to regulate or to curtail it.
Wow. That's dangerous. Yeah, and we face the same thing in Wisconsin. We have a governor here that's very pro-embryonic stem cell research and sees it as a great way to get some money coming into our state. And so he's proposing actually a Wisconsin taxpayer-funded embryonic stem cell research program. It's a problem here as well. And many people, as I said, do believe that that human life or human being or human personhood doesn't begin in 14 days of age. And it's just so illogical. It really goes against science. It goes against common sense thought to believe that. And basically, I think the reason to believe that is so that we can have license to do what we want to embryos before they're 14 days of age. And they attempt to define life by its death. They'll say, well, more embryos die before that age, or they'll say it's not implanted in the uterus yet, so they define attempt life by its location, or they'll say it doesn't have a neural tube yet, so they'll define life by a lack of a certain structure, or they'll say an embryo is just the size of a period at the end of a sentence, so they'll define life by its size, and about detecting twinning, there's all kinds of reasons they use, but it really doesn't make sense to say that life is anything else but when we have the beginning, when the full genetic potential of the human being is there at conception.
Then with only 30 seconds, Kevin, talking about that first method again, if a genuinely safe way could be developed to just pull one cell off, do it, the stem cell thing, let the embryo go merrily on its way, and it wouldn't involve the risk of destroying that embryo and doing it, would you in principle have a problem with that form of deriving stem cells?
No, I don't think I would. I would have a problem with that. I think we're reasonable, and if we understand the science, and of course we have our principle, our belief that the destruction of an embryo is intrinsically evil. But if some way can be found where there is no risk to the embryo, I don't think I would have an ethical problem with that.
Finally, Dr. Voss, what are appetites for your presentation at the upcoming Image of God Bioethics Conference on Friday, November the 11th here in St. Louis? What are you going to be talking about?
I'm going to be talking about Care at Life's End, and it'll be a presentation that's simple, easy to understand, made for lay people, not for scientists or anything like that. Pastors are invited to come to the presentation. It'll be part of an afternoon breakout session, and I'll talk about beliefs shaping today's medicine. I'll even describe the different definitions of death, heart, lung death, brain death, what a persistent vegetative state is. Then I'll talk about three hallmark cases and end-of-life situations that have influenced the laws in this country: the Quinlan case, Nancy Cruzan, which is important there in Missouri, and then the Terry Schiavo case. And then I'll finish up with some guidelines that Christians can use when it comes to end-of-life dilemmas.
It sounds like a primer on end-of-life.
Yes, basically that's what it's intended to be, primer on the end-of-life. But I'll also make some suggestions as to what we can do nationally as a result of that Terry Schiavo case, too.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing that presentation and to seeing you again, meeting you again at this conference. Dr. Kevin Voss, he's director of the Concordia Bioethics Institute, and he'll be one of those speakers at the Image of God Bioethics Conference Friday, November the 11th here in St. Louis. His topic, as he mentioned, care at life's end. Dr. Voss, thanks for being our guest.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks. It was a pleasure to be with you, and I'll be looking forward to seeing you too.
If that is just the tip of the iceberg of what you're going to get at this premier bioethics conference of 2005, I suggest you attend. It's right here in St. Louis, and Kevin Voss will be but one of the speakers there. Also, Wesley Smith and Gil Mylander. We're going to be broadcasting live from the Image of God Bioethics Conference. If you'd like more information, you can find it right there at our website, issuesetc.org. Issuesetc.org. When you get to the homepage, just scroll down a bit, and you'll see a logo, Image of God Bioethics Conference. Click on it, and all the information you need is there. I hope to meet you there. We'll be broadcasting live, Issues Etc., from the Image of God Bioethics Conference, Friday, November the 11th, here in St. Louis. All right, when we come back, some audio from CNN recently. The president has nominated Harriet Myers for the Supreme Court. This has been a rocky road, and she hasn't even entered the hearings yet. Well, what's the latest? The latest is there's some anecdotal stories coming out on her about her one-time serious opposition to abortion. She filled out a questionnaire. And the whole question is, what is her position here? What position does she hold? And there's quite a bit of misunderstanding. We're going to play two bits from CNN recently, and we're going to get your reaction to them as well when we come back. Open lines for the next 25 minutes of Issues Etc. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll spend a half hour in the third hour with Rick Horton, a former Cardinals, White Sox, and Dodgers pitcher, talking about the National League Championship Series. He'll join us live from Busch Stadium downtown. He's also area director of the Greater St. Louis Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And the last half hour of Issues Etc. is also open lines. We'll talk about a Christian sitcom there in the last 25 minutes.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is a place for forming pastors, not just an academic ivory tower.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Leonard Payton, on his experience as a student at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Certainly great Bible teaching. Professors are godly men, and they have time for students. Several professors are deep in pastoral experience. This is a place for forming pastors, not just an academic ivory tower. A well-planned daily chapel program models the conduct of the service. We learn what to do. Fort Wayne has decent schools and lots of strong, unashamedly Lutheran churches. It's been a great place for me and my family.
For more information or to schedule an on-campus visit, call Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, 1-800-481-2155, or visit them on the web, www.ctsfw.edu.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. A college professor says reality, at least at the molecular level, is too complex to believe Darwinism. The testimony came in the Dover, Pennsylvania court case that is debating the teaching of intelligent design. Josh Montes has more on the continuing legal battle.
The more we know about biology, the more problems Darwinism has, and the more design becomes apparent.
That's Michael Behe, a biochemistry professor at Lehigh University, talking about the scientific theory of intelligent design in a video. In court, Behe used scientific examples to prove that life is complex and needs a designer. Mark Ryland is with the Discovery Institute.
He was giving also examples from his own scientific work of kinds of structures in microbiology and inside the living cell. They seem to only make sense if they're more or less fully functioning.
Such as the workings of blood. Finn Larson is with the Christian Educators Association International.
The concept that blood all of a sudden appeared and was able to clot on its own, it was just one item that he used to explain the fact that there had to be a designer that put all those chemicals together.
Behe is arguing for balanced science in the schools. That's also what the court case is about.
He's advocating that public schools continue to teach evolution, but that they should also teach science beyond evolution, because there's much science being discovered that has been discovered that does not line up with the theory of evolution.
The case has entered its fourth week. For Family News in Focus, I'm Josh Montes.
Michael Behe is the author of Darwin's Black Box, written in 1996. It's a book that spurred the intelligent design movement. The Pennsylvania case is to determine if a disclaimer to students that intelligent design is an alternative theory to Darwinism is constitutional. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
Underwriting on AM 850 KFUO, provided by Reliable Heating and Cooling. Christian people who understand the value of bringing you God's Word on the radio. The folks at Reliable also know how important it is to have your furnace checked before winter. An inefficient or deteriorating heat exchanger costs you needless expense and could be dangerous. A preseason inspection from Reliable is convenient, affordable, and gives you peace of mind. Reliable Heating and Cooling, supporting the broadcast ministry of AM 850 KFUO.
The Ten Commandments, the Apostles' Creed, the Lord's Prayer, Baptism, the Lord's Supper, and Confession and Forgiveness are all covered in our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, Follow and Do. It's a series of illustrated books for young children. Follow and Do is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about Follow and Do on our website, issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. The next 25 minutes is open lines for your questions and your comments. I've got some audio to play from CNN. Everybody's trying to figure out where Harriet Myers stands, and we probably won't know for sure until, well, she's either on the court or not. But one way or the other, maybe even the hearings might not illuminate exactly what it is she believes about abortion. But abortion is the topic. There's no doubt about it. I'm a little happy about this, I got to admit, because rather than dancing around with all this code, you know, talking about, where does she stand on, what are her views on social issues? What are her views on rights? What is her views on privacy? They're just coming out and saying it. You'll hear it in the audio from CNN. What are her views on abortion? At least we're using the words. At least we're actually saying what the Supreme Court nominations are really all about. They are really about the nominees' positions on abortion, on Roe. And we'll hear a little bit here in some of this audio, also on another court case, Casey, as well. This is instructive stuff. It really is. And I hope maybe by the end we'll try and figure out whether or not it really matters. Does it matter to you? Is this kind of just, look, this is always rolling the dice. Send them up. See what they have to say. Run them up the flagpole, and if enough people salute, we've got ourselves a Supreme Court nominee, and there are no guarantees in life, so she could just turn out to be the greatest thing or the worst thing. And then you've got Dr. James Dobson saying, I know, I'm going to support her, because I had a conversation with Karl Rove, and I heard enough to convince me. Well, What he heard was that she's an evangelical Christian. And if you read Barna's research, being an evangelical Christian doesn't guarantee she's pro-life, not in by any stretch of the imagination. All right, this first cut, and then I'll take your phone calls after the audio, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. In this first cut from CNN, Ed Henry, he's congressional correspondent for CNN, just outlines the general dilemma with Harriet Myers, the Supreme Court nominee.
Senator Arlen Specter is growing frustrated that Harriet Myers' nomination is getting bogged down.
I'm becoming more and more concerned that Harriet Myers is being tried in the media.
The latest blow-up over abortion. The White House gave Specter's committee documents, including a questionnaire Myers filled out in 1989 while running for Dallas City Council, in which she supported a constitutional ban on abortion. Some White House allies are circulating the document to convince restless Republicans she will support their agenda. That mission became more critical after Specter said Myers privately told him a key Supreme Court decision, the underpinning for legalized abortion, was rightly decided. Myers claims Specter misunderstood her, though the senator stands behind his version and refused a White House request for a correction.
It seemed to me that the best course is to accept her view and to defer getting into it any more deeply until the hearing.
Even as Myers' allies try to shore up conservative support, they angered Democrats like Dianne Feinstein, who charged the questionnaire raises, quote, very serious concerns about whether Myers will be biased on the abortion issue. Democrat Chuck Schumer said that after all the back and forth, senators in both parties are more confused than ever about exactly where Harriet Myers stands on abortion. Ed Henry, CNN, Capitol Hill.
All right. I guess they're in good company because I am as confused as I ever was before as well. So we've got a questionnaire that says that she opposes abortion, and then Senator Specter says, no, that's not what I'm hearing. And he is pretty sure of what he heard from Harriet Myers. All right, it's Open Lines, Issues, etc. Your thoughts on the Myers nomination, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Do you see this more clearly than I do? Because I thought I was unclear last week. I'm even more unclear this week on, and here's this questionnaire that comes out of the White House. The president said a couple weeks ago, never talked to her about abortion. Now, bear in mind, she has been in one form or another working for him personally, working for him as an elected official for a long, long time. Never talked about abortion, he said. Okay. And then all of a sudden there's this questionnaire that they seem to have possession of. That comes out when things are getting hot and heated in opposition to Myers. It's hard for me to believe that they can claim ignorance on her viewpoints when they're trying to press her viewpoints here. All right, here's another piece of audio, this also from CNN. In this one, it's a conversation between Jeffrey Tobin, who's the CNN legal analyst, and Soledad O'Brien of CNN's American Morning.
What she said, according to Arlen Specter, was that she endorses the result, supports the Griswold case, which is a very important case about the right to privacy and that leads to the right to abortion.
So after he made that public, the White House apparently came out and said, oh, actually, he's going to redact or take away that statement.
Well, which he then did not do,
right.
Interestingly.
So he released a statement. He didn't hold a press. And here's exactly what he said. Ms. Myers called him to say that he misunderstood her and that she had not taken a position on Griswold, this privacy case, or the privacy issue. Senator Specter accepts Ms. Myers' statement that he misunderstood what she said. This is not a, my bad, I got it wrong.
If you know anything about Arlen Specter does not think he misunderstands what people say. He's a very self-confident person, and he is not someone who is going to acknowledge that he didn't understand a legal issue that, frankly, I am sure he knows a lot more about than Harriet Myers does.
Because, of course, this is his field of expertise, isn't
correct, it? Correct, correct. And why this is important, the Griswold case, 1965 Supreme Court decision, there was a law in Connecticut that said married couples could not buy birth control. And the Supreme Court in 1965 for the first time said, under the Constitution there is a right to privacy, and this law in Connecticut violates married people's right to privacy.
So if you support that law, ergo it goes that you would support a Roe v. Wade because that was sort of based on somewhat this case, Griswold.
Many people who support Roe v. Wade all also support Griswold. Just because you support Griswold, it does not guarantee that you will support Roe, but it is certainly an indication.
A little bit of a litmus test.
And that's why people care so much about Griswold now, because it is sort of like a proxy for Roe.
Arlen Specter supports abortion rights. So in this conversation that took place, didn't take place, I'm not really sure, considering everybody's statements about it, what do you think is a bigger implication here? Is he saying that she's trying to play both sides, talking to a supporter of abortion rights, saying, I support Griswold, when the White House is saying to conservatives, she's very religious, she would clearly not support abortion rights?
See, this is the problem with nominating someone who has no record. It's because her record is starting to come out in these piecemeal conversations where apparently no one is precisely sure what is said. And what makes this particular incident so bad, I think, is that it alienates everyone. Because pro-choice people, like Specter, like most people in the United States and most people in the Senate, say, come on, Griswold, I mean, do you really think the government can ban birth control? That is such a basic fundamental right that most Americans expect they have that it seems crazy that someone wouldn't support that. Yet the anti-abortion people, who are obviously very important as well, say, well, come on, why are you nominated to the court if you are not going to reject the right to privacy, which creates Roe?
We're out of time, but I'm going to ask you a final question anyway, which is, do you think that all this will be made clear in the hearing before the senators eventually? Or do you think she's going to say, I'm not going to tell you how I would rule on a case?
John Roberts, who was our nearest president, said he did support Griswold and did support the right to privacy, but he wouldn't commit himself on Roe. I think you're likely to see a similar formulation from Harriet Myers.
All right, that's CNN audio from CNN American Morning. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Your calls for the next 15 minutes on the Myers nomination. Are you confused? I am. It's not only, as Tobin said, they're not only managed to alienate everyone, it seems to be managing to both the White House's strategy and the nominee's strategy here seems to be confusing everyone on the all-important issue of abortion and where she stands. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. At the beginning of the next hour, we'll talk with former Cardinals pitcher Rick Horton about the National League Championship Series. And tomorrow on the program, we'll talk to Greg Laurie. You've heard of him, haven't you? About the successful Christian life. That's coming up tomorrow on Issues Etc. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's talk with April. April, thanks for waiting. Welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you. Yes. You know why everybody's confused is because she's a twisted woman. She is on one side of the coin, pro-life, but then she turns right back around and says, well, I will support people who don't have abortions as long as it doesn't threaten the pregnant woman's body. And if it comes down to the mother losing her life, then she would rather see the unborn child murdered instead. I remember specifically in the Old Testament where Solomon so wisely judged, where a woman had just recently had a baby and another woman was making as if it was her own. And King Solomon wisely discerned and said, all right, I'll split the baby in two. And then the mother of the child said, no, let the other woman have the child. And he then proceeded to have the woman who falsely portrayed herself as the mother put to death. The mother should in no way, shape, or form put herself before the life of her child.
That's a good that's a good illustration, April. I think it's a good place to go in Scripture to illustrate what's happening generally in abortion. You know, Harriet Myers' personal views on abortion, I don't think they're all that relevant. I really don't. Not her personal views. For this reason, now listen and hear me out. Her personal views on abortion are not relevant for this reason. There are a lot of people who are personally opposed to abortion, but they don't think it should be illegal. So she can say all day long, I'm personally opposed to abortion. I think abortion is bad. It's the second part of the question that's relevant, and that is, should it be legal? That's the question. That's why Griswold and the right to privacy is so much in the conversation nowadays. That's why they're talking about a, where are we now, 40-year-old Supreme Court case. Griswold had to do in that case that became, no one knew it would, but it became the basis for the Roe Court pulling out and weaving together and cobbling together a right to privacy in the way they did in the Roe decision. Because Griswold had to do with birth control, and it had to do with the person's right not to have the purchase of birth control become an issue of public interest. And so they said, look, the privacy extends to people purchasing and using birth control. Well, the Roe Court picked that up and ran with it. They ran into areas no one, maybe even the Griswold Court, never dreamed they might. But in 1965, we have this first mention of this right to privacy, and then in 1973, it bears full fruit in the Roe decision. So here is Harriet Meyer saying, at one time, she supports Griswold, and then on the other hand saying, she, no, that's not what I meant. And I'm confused. Because these are the real issues that count, not her personal views on abortion. I'm interested to find out her personal views. I would hope that her personal views would inform her her legal views. But what's really the issue is, because anyone can say I'm opposed to abortion, the question is, do you believe it should be illegal? You know, I think in theory you could come up with somebody, there might even be people like this, who are personally in favor of abortion, but think that Roe was bad law, an illegitimate decision, who don't support the Roe decision. Although they would say, look, I'd like to see abortion. I just think we did it the wrong way. I think abortion should be everyone's right, but I think we went about it the wrong way in the Roe decision. I'm sure someplace there are lawyers, judges, law school professors who are willing to say something like that. Just as there are many who say, I'm personally opposed to abortion, but I think it should remain legal. That's the real issue. Should it remain legal? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. So I'm still as confused as I was before. How about the rest of you? Or does it even matter? I mean, everyone's chattering on about the Harriet Meyer's nomination and what she believes and what she doesn't believe. Does it even matter to you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Up next, Wesley is calling from Litchfield. Hi, Wesley.
Hello, how you doing?
Very well.
I just called in. I was just trying to, kind of like behind the scenes. The last lady that called in, she said that King Solomon killed the one woman, but that's not in the Bible. Oh, I just wanted to note that.
Oh, thank you. Okay. I didn't catch that April had said that. I didn't catch that. I know that the woman who actually came to the defense of the baby ended up being judged to be the mother of the baby. Maybe I was spacing or doodling or something like that. Do you, the president has said, trust me. Do you trust President Bush on this decision? He must know. If he doesn't, then he's not the man that many believed him to be when they voted for him. He must know that the issue that will be the most important issue in the nomination of any Supreme Court justice is abortion, in particular, is Roe. He must know this. Do you trust his decision in this nomination? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. That's all he's given us to go on. He knows her heart. He said that before. He knows her character. He knows her heart. Trust me. He has said that to you, to me, to all of the American public who are concerned about abortion and about its continued legality. Trust me. Do you trust him? Where do you stand on the Myers nomination? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's Open Lines Issues, etc. this Wednesday, October the 19th, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Robert Bork wrote something today, an op-ed piece. My goodness. He's now sounding like Pat Buchanan. He wonders whether or not the president has the will to see Roe overturned. And he's questioning with this nomination, and it's very complicated business, but I suggest you read it. He is questioning whether or not the president has the will to see Roe v. Wade overturned, and he pretty much comes down and says no. He is not willing to fight that fight with Supreme Court nominees. And Harriet Meyer, he cites as evidence. Okay, the president must know a couple things. He must know that the issue for Supreme Court nominations is abortion. Over gay marriage, over all of the other issues that would come before them. Everything. It is the overriding issue. He, on both sides, politically, he must also know that those who voted for him twice did so largely because they trusted him when he said that he would put, and the code back then, we were all still using code, we weren't saying abortion, he would put a strict constructionist on the bench, in the likes of Scalia or Thomas. All right? Well, now all the code is gone, and the issue is now just the bare word abortion. And he says he hasn't talked to this nominee about abortion. But trust me. And a couple days ago, they release a questionnaire or a copy of a questionnaire where she seemed to be against abortion and willing to support measures against it. And then she's kind of calling those things into question. When the time comes, and it's coming rather quickly, to look back and evaluate this president's legacy, how significant will this nomination to the Supreme Court be? What role will this nomination play in how you evaluate President George W. Bush's legacy? Our call-in numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And, I mean, I say this, please don't take offense, but look, if she gets in and she's, do you remember the Supreme Court nominee that that followed Robert Bork after Bork was Borked and then he fell off, and then President Reagan nominated someone that was more amenable to everyone's sensibilities? You remember what happened? We got not a swing vote. We got a liberal vote on the Supreme Court. And, of course, social, moral, religious conservatives have whined about that ever since. I judge from your silence you have no whining scheduled in your calendar if Harriet Myers turns out to be another one of those. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Just giving your chance to voice your opinion in advance. I know you're between a rock and a hard place. I'm a supporter of President Bush as well, but facts is facts, or in this case, the lack of facts is the lack of facts. Coming up in a couple of weeks, we're going to be celebrating 10 years of Issues, Etc. Now, I've only been around for just about 7 of those, but very exciting, fun-filled, and challenging opportunities all for those 7 years. Very proud to say that I've been a part of this for that long. I'll have a few words to say about that coming up in a couple of weeks when we celebrate 10 years of Issues, Etc. with our banquet on the campus of Concordia Seminary here in Clayton, Wartburg Hall. You were invited. There is limited seating, so you're going to want to call Jenny Williams as soon as possible and reserve a place for yourself. Jenny's number, 314-505-7836, 314-505-7836, or you can email Jenny anytime, and she'll get back with you and tell you everything you need to know and get you a reservation. Jenny W at KFUO.org, Jenny W at KFUO.org. Space is limited, as I said before, and we've only got about probably a little bit less than 100 seats left in those weeks to fill. So Jenny W. at KFUO.org and her number, 314-505-7836. All right, let's go back to the phones. Louise is calling from her car. Hi, Louise.
I just have to tell you that I'm as confused as you are. And I'm not sure if this is a comment or a question, but
okay.
I got to thinking that what if this were a couple of years ago and all the things that have happened in the last year or so hadn't happened yet, and he said, trust me, if people would feel differently about this, if there would still be such a fuss about everything, if they would just say, oh, okay, well, we'll confirm it.
So what are the things you're talking about?
About Harriet Meyer's nomination and his saying, well, trust me on this.
But when you say what things that have happened in the past?
Oh, you know, just the war in Iraq and how his numbers have gone down and the Katrina thing and all those kinds of things. And
okay, I understand what you're saying. I don't know. I mean, that would require me to speculate. I do know what he promised when he was elected twice. And that wasn't just, I promise and I hope to do it. Supreme Court nominees are big promises. Linda calls from her car. Linda, welcome.
Yes, I trust the president. I believe that Harriet Myers will be the person that will help overturn Roe. Just because she believes in a right to privacy doesn't not mean that she believes in a right to murder, which, of course, abortion is. So that's it. I just trust him.
All right, Linda.
Thank you.
Honest woman, thank you. I don't know if I can. And you're right. You're absolutely right, Linda. Just because she supports Griswold, or actually it's kind of questionable whether she does support Griswold, but just because she supports Griswold and her right to privacy does not mean she supports Roe. That's true. Dave calls from St. Charles. Dave, we've got 30 seconds.
Yeah, okay. I basically have 2 points. Second point first. I want to hear the hearings and hear what she has to say, the mayor. But on the first thing is I happen to think it's a brilliant nomination. Everyone is forgetting from Rush to Krauthammer to Coulter what happened last spring when all those rhinos, the Republicans and name-only senators, did not hope pulled a filibuster. So if he came through with a truly conservative nominee, it had been shot down. We'd had a Bork thing again. But he came through with this one. Now, it's a lot of controversy, but I think it's brilliant, given senators. A conservative would be shot down and filibustered.
Dave, thank you. Well, I guess if you're interested in winning the nominee but losing the court, you could call it brilliant. Is it a risk you want to take? I mean, he can chalk it up as a victory, overcoming a filibuster or sidestepping a filibuster. The question for me is the quality and the viewpoints of the person actually making it onto the court. When we come back, Rick Horton on the National League Championships. We'll be right back with Hour 3 of Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.